Hey everyone, welcome to Myopia Movies. This week we continue our M Night into the M Day as we review yet another M Night Shyamalan movie. This week we are covering The Village. This is the first one that I saw that I was like, you know what? I don't know if I need to see any more of him. Anyway, thank you for listening, thank you for subscribing, thank you for following along with us, and please enjoy this episode. If you are interested in what we do, of course, I will tell you that next week we're going to do The Happening with Mark Wahlberg. But also, you know, reach out. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Facebook. We have a pretty active Facebook group. Thanks, guys. Welcome to week three of M. Night Shyamalan's life, The Village. I am your host, your God, your friend, the tallest person, but the littlest God, Nick Hoffman. And I'll bet we have
author Matthew W. Quinn, who promises not to be an overly intense dick this time like he was during Signs.
It's fine.
You're fine. You know what? You're fine.
Life is good, and we've continued, kneecap. And he hit his knee on the table, so, you know, we're keeping it in.
We're going to talk about The Village, and here's the thing about The Village.
And the people in The Village.
The Village. What? There are the people in the town. Oh. A different village.
YMCA. YMCA.
Oh, God, help me. Here's the thing about The Village. Everyone saw The Sixth Sense because that's what you did. And then when I was home from college for the first time, I was working at a restaurant called Provence. I was trying to pick up a lady named Bronwyn, but I was spending a lot of time at our good friend Mark Lechner's house. At college, because at Georgia Tech, they don't let you have friends or souls. They work you all year long, and he was taking the summer semester. So I was sleeping on their couch a bunch, and we played a game, a very complicated game called Pass the Jack Daniels, where there was an open bottle of Jack Daniels, and we passed it back and forth while we watched M. Night Shyamalan movie. And that's how I saw Signs, until we could no longer say M. Night Shyamalan, and then I fell off the couch. But Signs scared the ever-loving piss out of me. And I loved M. Night Shyamalan. And I saw Sixth Sense, and I saw Unbreakable, and I saw this. And then I saw The Village. I'll tell you what, watching The Village, I had not seen another M. Night Shyamalan movie in theaters since.
Burn.
Did you see this in theater?
Yes.
And what did you think at the time?
That was one of the very... I don't get scared easily during movies, which I recognize intellectually is not healthy. But there are two scenes in that movie actually frightened me. One, when he takes her into the shed and you think the monster.
Yeah.
And two, when spoilers for the movie are going to be spoiling in 20, 30 minutes anyway, Noah attacks her in the woods in the monster suit. That actually scared me.
I will say.
Somehow the scar tissue and ice around my soul cracked for that one solitary second.
I will say... and we talked about this before, and we'll talk about it again, and, you know, whatever. In Signs, when the alien shows up at the Brazilian birthday party, that had... It seized my heart. Like, you know, you really go... This movie did it twice, just like you said. When... I mean, and they even do the early on thing when everyone's having a wedding box social nonsense... And then all of a sudden, out of the corner of their eye, you see a crumbing across the door, someone in red with the claws. And it's horrifying.
The bad color. Oh, boy, I'm a torture Nick the whole time.
I'm trying to keep a positive outlook at first, but...
Always look on the bright side of life. Don't sue us, please. Fair use.
I tell you what. The idea of red being the bad color is fine. And if you've seen The Sixth Sense, red is the bad color. And it's an M. Night Shyamalan. It's a very directorial choice. And, God, you want the direction choice from a director who has a sense of choice. But, God help me, it makes no sense in this
environment. Yeah, especially as these people are living like it's the 1800s. They probably kill their own animals. But so red is everywhere.
A, they're supposed to be vegetarian.
They're vegetarian?
B, they do sacrifice an animal to what they call the meat eaters. So there's blood. And two, I'm sorry, half this cast is women and you know what menstruation is, and there's red. You can't say red is always the bad color.
And then we get into the mechanics of alleged who was killing the animals later, which also makes no sense. I mean, this is not the worst Shyamalan movie, but you can tell when the rot is starting to set in, because after this one, then he starts bombing.
I will say, to me, this stinks of he's made so much gold, baby, he's bulletproof. We'll just let him go on his own.
Yeah, it's like,
and there's no one who said no, except they said there had to be a fucking twist. And you know what? This movie would have been great if there was no twist. You don't need a twist, because the first thing this movie does is lie to me.
Yeah, J.K. Rowling or George R. R. Martin syndrome. No one is telling them no, and their books are getting longer and longer and longer.
And here's the thing. Sometimes it's fine. Stephen King, no one said no to him for 30 years other than stop the cocaine. And his books get longer and longer, and we're fine with it. But here, if someone had just watched this before it came out, God bless her. Sigourney Weaver said she read the script and it scared her. And that can't be true. I'm sorry. I don't know.
Scared her more an alien?
Right? See, now you can see the problem.
Now, different.
Do you want to do the plot synopsis or shall I?
I shall put myself on the cross as usual.
You beautiful man. Yeah. Smash cut.
It's to a funeral. And it's supposedly like 1897. Oops, I hint about the twist. Yeah. No, I hinted about the twist. And a funeral, and they have a box social in this small town. It looks like they're all Amish, but they live by these weird little superstitions. Like when they see red, they have to bury it. And they never leave the town because there's those they don't speak of. And then meanwhile, we meet
the ones they call the meat eaters.
Yeah, or those of which we do not speak. And then meanwhile, we have Bryce Dallas Howard, who's Ivy, who's blind. Lucius, Joaquin Phoenix, who's real quiet and intense, and then Aidan Brody as Noah, who is an adult man who's mentally like five. That's how he always comes off to me.
No, he's supposed to be special needs, which is, I don't want to say it's problematic, but it's strange.
Well, it's like a five-year-old doesn't comprehend when you hit someone, it hurts, only he's big enough to actually kill someone.
But they also don't do anything about it, and we'll get to the twist later on.
Yeah,
but
also known as how many.
That's pretty much it.
Also known as how many counts of negligence.
Well, okay. So, I mean, the only thing I would add to Matt's back of the box, description was something happens where they have to go to the big city,
the towns.
Yes, yeah, right.
Which they are so very the towns.
You know what, though? If I was, if anyone could actually talk to M. Night Shyamalan and make him do something, the better title is The Town. Although, to be fair, later on, Ben Affleck made a very, very, very good movie called The Town, which you should watch. I don't even know how to progress from here. The opening scene, like Matt said, is someone died in 1897 is supposed to be the year.
Yeah, it's 1897, and some of the fashions they're wearing look more modern, like they have bowler hats.
1890s had bowler hats.
Yeah, so I mean, they're not like total Amish living. It's like the 1500s, but still.
Oh, you want to tip your hand.
For a 30-year-old movie. No, not 30.
Not even.
25?
18.
18-year-old movie. So this movie can vote now.
That's right.
Watch out, people. Not able to drink yet, but it can vote.
If it was written in italics and it was made in Europe, it could actually even drink now?
Well, if it could drink, couldn't it be 6 years old then?
16, but still, I get it. To be fair, Germany is the Alabama of Europe, so you could age of consent and drinking is both 16, so we're fine. the smash cut open is this funeral scene, I'm not going to take it from him because Matt made this point when we were talking about Signs and, whatever. The cast of this film is incredible, right?
Yeah, they've got John Hurt. Is it John Hurt or William Hurt?
William Hurt.
He's
John
good.
John Hurt is the guy from Home Alone. He's the dad of Home Alone.
And they've got Sigourney Weaver.
Mm-hmm.
I already went over the younger people.
mentioned Adrian Brody.
Yeah, Adrian Brody, Bryce Dallas Howard, and Joaquin Phoenix. They have a very – Shyamalan has got a very good cast, and they – I mean, okay, half the time they sound like a bunch of Shakespeare troopers LARPing as Amish, but Hurt can hurt when he's, like, talking about why he does the things he does. Well, he can emote, and you feel it.
I will add two more. Brendan Gleeson, the dad at the beginning, who's fat, drunk, and angry.
Oh, that the fat one.
Yeah, he's the guy who's holding his son's coffin and weeping like a child, like he should be. If you haven't seen him, I'll recommend two movies in particular. The Guard and In Bruges, which, as a Belgian, if you haven't seen In Bruges, I would love you. Also, second... you should mention Judy Greer, the other redhead, the sister.
The overdramatic one. I love you. I love you.
The one who professes her love to Joaquin Phoenix and rejects her. But here's the thing. I love Judy Greer. For those of you who have seen Archer, she plays Crystal / Cristal. Like, she's in everything. She has 157 credits, and she's my age. But unfortunately, she always plays the friend, though.
The friend zoned?
I will say, like Matt said, the star is Bryce Dallas Howard. She has the most to do, but this is some trivia. This is some Hoffman trivia because my daughter loves dinosaurs. But Bryce Dallas Howard is the star of Jurassic World and the second two, Kingdom and Dominion. But. Inspired by Shyamalan, Judy Greer plays her sister in Jurassic World, Jurassic Park Dominion, and Jurassic Park Kingdom.
Oh.
Because they're both redheads, like vibrant redheads. They're the same height, and they look similar.
Oh. So,
and by the way, in case you want to feel uncomfortable, because I love you, but I know you do, on an interview, Ron Howard, her father, the guy who directed movies, including Solo and Apollo 13, the two of his that I actually like. I don't really care for his Da Vinci Code movie, whatever. He said, "I always add to my child's name the city in which they were conceived."
Yeah, Bryce Dallas Howard.
And I will say, Bryce Dallas Howard is fine. Making fun of her for running in high heels in Jurassic World is the right joke to make. But she's fine in that. However, I will give her credit. She's a very good director. Her episodes that she directed of The Mandalorian were my favorite. She's a good director. In this movie, it's very strange. She's playing a blind woman, kind of.
But she apparently a blind woman who may or may not have psychic powers.
And I'm saying not because of what Matt said, but because he's right. This movie is a lot of wiggly hand, maybe magic, question mark?
Oh no, time to invoke the dreaded TV tropes. Maybe magic, maybe mundane.
Yeah, but like, here's the problem. I don't like TV tropes when we're talking about a movie we can all get behind, but this movie really feels like he was reading the TV tropes and he's like, but what if I'm M. Night Shyamalan, and what if I was like a park ranger, and you only saw me in reflection or reading the Philadelphia Inquirer.
In Lady in the Water, he gives himself a really big part, and that annoyed people. And in Signs, he gives himself a smaller part, which he doesn't necessarily do super well in.
Here's the thing. This is a cameo
that's not so bad.
It's fine. It's fine. But here's the thing. So much of this movie doesn't matter. Okay. So, we're in a 19th century village that looks like you visited the shittier version of Williamsburg. And you're like, what if we could horse a shoe? And then all of a sudden...
And everyone talks like the Shakespeare in the Park troupe.
You've seen some pretty shitty Shakespeare in the Park. This seems like middle schoolers doing Shakespeare. Because they're not doing an accent, they're just saying, but what for if you were to foredo four, four, four? And you're just like... Why?
Yeah, William Hurt, when he sees the kids at the school all gathered around a dead animal or something, he goes into this whole polysyllabic, iambic pentameter, ridiculously poetic way of saying, what are you looking at that's more interesting than my lesson? I mean, it's clever, but he sounds so weird saying it.
And here's the thing. Do you want to give away the spoilers?
Must I get upon the cross again? Nicholas?
I'll take that silver bullet from you, my friend. It's actually 2004. It's supposed to be 2004. And this is a society in which everyone has faced some sort of tragedy. You know, my brother was a doctor and he was killed by someone in the ER. My wife had a business partner who murdered them when things got too tight.
Yeah, it's a bunch of people who all suffered street crimes and other tragedies who decide to go LARP as Amish, and then a bunch of their kids die or get crippled by things they could have fixed. Even the Amish should go to the hospital if something's going really wrong.
Well, and specifically,
these
William
people
Hurt.
Are freaking morons.
And specifically, William Hurt said something like, "I was a history teacher at the University of, it's still Pennsylvania, because don't worry, M. Night Shyamalan did not drive too far." But he was like, so he was at UPenn or whatever, and he was like, "I have an idea. I'm a historian and I have an idea." And you're just, that's it. But that begs the question already, what Matt and I were talking about. Why talk like you're a failed middle schooler doing Romeo and Juliet? Talk like people.
It's so ridiculous.
Especially when no one's listening. Like, it's so like, but what if we could venture forth? And it's all this halting dialogue. And you're just like, talk like a person. Please, your kid is dying. The part of this movie that drove me nuts was not the twist. I mean, at this point, this is his fourth movie. I expected a twist. But I want an immersive world throughout. And God damn it, the thing about Shyamalan is he still does things so fucking well. There are jump scares in here that curdled my blood.
Yeah, mine too. And that takes a lot.
Matt doesn't have a soul.
Yeah, I've started to notice that lately.
Anyway, there's some gags here. But the first thing, I know I mentioned this already, but it bothers the hell out of me. It doesn't count as a twist if the movie lies to you. The first thing we see is a pretty good scene wherein Brendan Gleeson is hugging this pine coffin of his son, who's only 7 or 8 years old, and he's heartbroken because the kid was 7 or 8 years old, and based on what happened later, he probably died of stubbing his toe or, like, an infected, like, splinter. And no one did anything, which I'm putting I'm putting the pin back in here because we'll get to it in a second, but when a 7-year-old dies tragically, it's bad. I mean, like, kids can die of cancer and all sorts of things. But in this world, since there's no medicine, it could have been a stubbed toe.
Yeah, and William Hurt is a U.S. history professor. That's how they knew how to create this little theme park in the first place.
Well, but I will
and
also say,
and he should know how incredibly dangerous this is. I mean, what a freaking idiot.
But they even call someone in there the doctor. So theoretically, there's a medical doctor, and it might have even been Gleason, because he's the one who tells, what's her name? I even forget. I mean, it's Bryce Dallas Howard's character, what medicine to get. So theoretically, there's someone who knows a little bit about medicine. I mean,
People have been, you know, dying of stubbed toes with penicillin growing on their bread. They could still have antibiotics while LARPing as Amish.
There could have been anything. You could have said it's literally 2004, but instead of monster, there's a fucking zombie invasion. So we have this medicine. That's why things get flimsy really quick. Real quick. But I bring it up very specifically because we're getting the whole forward momentum of this movie very quickly is Joaquin Phoenix. He's a handsome guy. He's very stoic. He doesn't say much. Judy Greer expresses her love for him
like an overdramatic middle schooler.
It's the funniest scene. And I'm sorry. It's cut like it's a joke. It's sad. But she is, you know, she's ebullient. Like, the flowers are blooming. You know, she's a woman coming into her own. It's a scene right out of a, you know, some sort of educational video. And she goes, I'm going to tell him I love him. And then she opens the door and tells Joaquin Phoenix she loves him. Smash cut to her crying on her mother's chest, and it's the funniest fucking thing.
Yeah, it's just, I don't remember if how much I felt sorry for, I'm like, what is wrong with you?
But we talked about this when we did Signs. There are subtle bits of levity, but at this point I'd say the script is good. Why? We're talking about familial relations. We don't know why yet. Why he's so stoic, but we get the idea that this is a very traditional world. This is not quite the Crucible, right? But it's there's very traditional values. You know, it's a very conservative town.
They have women as well as men in the town meetings. They haven't gone all the way back to the Crucible yet.
But we don't know why. And dun, I dun, will dun, say... Dun.
Yet.
Yet. And I'm going to pose this question to you now, and we'll get to it to the end, but when did you give up on this movie?
I don't remember giving up on it. I just remember the more you think about it, the more so much doesn't make sense, which we'll probably get to more when we get to it.
Yeah, and I mean... and
we touched on it a little bit with the bad color.
Yeah, but see, like, here's the thing. I agree with you. And the first time they say it's the bad color, and it's like, if I recall correctly, the first time they say it, it's like a few kids, maybe middle school age, and they're playing with it, and they see it, they're like, well, we have to bury it now. I'm just like, okay, there's a lot of world building that he does here, but so much of it feels like it doesn't matter. Like, if you're going to do the Shakespeare talky-talk thing, clean up the language, focus on it more, and I love you, buddy, Knight. Get a Shakespearean dude to come in and make sure that's what they're doing the whole time. Because it feels so much like a very lazy, like, you and I are high school teachers, and it's like, all right, I'll read for you. Forsooth, what light through yonder window breaks? It is the dawn, and Julia is the sun. You know, like that's what, and again, William Hurt, who theoretically is the dude who came up with all this, should be like, I will be doing this because I went to all the Rennes festivals outside of Philadelphia, and so I will be the bard who juggles. And you're just like,
yeah,
but he's not committing. He's just doing his normal, like, so, you know, why did you say that? Esmeralda. Like, there's these weird pauses as though he's looking for light, and everyone's doing it.
So he's like Thanos?
He is! But it's also Sigourney Weaver, whom, again, I love Sigourney Weaver, who, and she said it was the scariest thing it was the scariest because she had hired a contractor to fix her basement, and she saw the script, and she's like, this will make no money. But she's like...
Instead of needing a new bathroom, she had a new basement?
Sometimes you gotta go down. but like her in this, it's so dry. Why do you have all these actors that you hire because they're charismatic and you iron out all the creases?
Well, even when William Hurt is that whole, what are you seeing that is more interesting than my lesson? He sounds so strange, but he delivers it well. It's just what he delivers well sounds strange.
I don't know. I mean, again, the only thing I can imagine, because this cast is so strong, that they liked working with him. It just seems like at the end of the edit, it's just such a wet fart. I think you were there, but I was talking with Daniel at one point. How do you make, like, there's so many stupid remakes out there. What should we remake? Why are you remaking good movies? Remake this. This movie is like, if you were golfing, it's a slice. If you're playing baseball, it's a foul ball.
Well, the way the lords of Hollywood judge whether a movie's good or not, if it made money, and The Village made money, it's just you start seeing the Shyamalan follies that are going to come in real hard later.
But to me, this is the movie you could remake and make it better. Like you said, it made money. They remake movies that make money. This movie has good ideas. And also, I will say, the problem, at least to me, is script and editing, but the acting is good. The direction is good. Some of the camera shots are incredible. And again, we talked about how there were jump scares that worked. But even when Bryce Dallas Howard eventually goes into the woods, it's terrifying.
Yeah, let's send a blind girl who's never left the town through over the river and through the woods to the park ranger station we go.
And
who thought that was a good idea?
Well, and before I respond to Matt, the bat color is red, so she's wearing this vibrant yellow hood, like hooded cloak.
Little red yellow hood?
Right. But so to Matt's point, it's I would guess late fall, the leaves have fallen, so it's a lot of like browns and grays as she's pushing her way through the forest. And she's the most vivid thing there, but she can't be red. And it's just it's the like the cinematography, the optics are incredible, but it matters for nothing. It's such an empty premise.
I think the idea is the people who wear yellow watch the borders of the town to because of the truce with those we do not speak of. Those we don't speak of, that we speak of a hell of a lot.
Well, and you've taught AP. It reminds me of in Shintoism, where they have the little, like, ziggity-zag flags. In this, they have the flags surrounding the border of the town. So you have these ropes strung up with these white, or sorry, these yellow little, like,
pennants? Pennants.
Yeah. That hang around the entire extremity of the town. And one of the first things we see that the frat boy townie is doing is standing right on the edge on like a stump.
Yeah, because that's all there really is to do in this small town is troll the demons that live in the woods, allegedly.
Allegedly.
Yeah, so while our colleague has stepped out for the moment, I guess I'm in charge and I will keep everyone entertained somewhat. Of course, they always edit it, so what's the point? Someone as talented as M. Night Shyamalan wrote a script and made a movie that looks good and has good acting, but the more you think about it, the less sense it makes. It's just so absurd. Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, they keep talking about those of which we do not speak, but they certainly speak about them a lot. You know, if there's some sort of taboo to say their name, maybe there's a name and they use those of which you do not speak as a substitute. But you're going to have quite a credit sequence listening to me ranting here alone.
Yeah, I don't edit. Someone else does. I think his name is
Chuck.
Charlie? Anyway. Okay, so one thing we should mention after Judy Greer pledges her love to
Lucius Hunt, who never talks.
Yeah. And has a breakdown. We're kind of reintroduced to the rest of the cast of characters, specifically Ivy, who is Bryce Dallas Howard. She's blind. And she's like the daughter of the head elder. And the problem is Noah, who's played by Adrian Brody, is in love with her.
I get the idea. He's the one who's brain damaged. I get the idea she's sort of in charge of him.
And but like also vice versa, he's in love with her. Which will come up later, of course. But it's just, this is where the movie, it's not just problematic, but it asks all the questions. Obviously, autism is not something you can cure, especially with like avoiding vaccinations, because if you avoid vaccinations, you're a bad person. But her blindness is also a question.
It sounded like something that came on because something way her dad talks about it.
But we live in 21st century America. So does this. There are a lot of things that can cause slow blindness, including fevers like yellow fever, including parasites. Not a lot of kids nowadays get slow growing complete blindness. Like, it's entirely possible she just needs glasses. We don't know.
So the auras are really just really blurry vision?
Here's the thing. Eventually, the whole point of the matter is Joaquin Phoenix eventually gets her love professed. After Judy Greer says no, Bryce Dallas Howard rescues... Okay. This is so weird. The monsters who are the meat eaters attack the town. And Joaquin Phoenix rescues Bryce Dallas Howard's character. She falls in love. And there's kind of this very sweet scene where they kind of fall in love. Adrian Brody is jealous and takes the sharpest of knives and stabs Joaquin Phoenix. Apparently, in the original cut, this movie was rated R, but because it was purchased and distributed by Touchstone and then Buena Vista, which is Disney, they took out the R rating. Because apparently the stabbing scene lasted about 15 seconds longer, and it was wet. It was a... As you can hear the knife.
I think the second stab, you can hear it more. Like, you don't even hear the first stab at all. You just... Adrian Brody has suddenly gotten close to him, and then he looks down, and there's... Yeah.
But apparently in the original cut, it was an R rating, and they wanted it to be PG-13, so they cut out the wetness of it all. And the reason I bring it up is I did enjoy this movie more than I thought, and we'll get there at the end, whether it's recommended or not. But the first 40 minutes of this is almost Downton Abbey. It's very slow. It grows.
Yeah, there's a wedding. It's like there's a harvest festival and a wedding, and somehow livestock are being killed. And there's no really, and the explanation they give for it makes no sense, which I'll get to in a minute.
Yeah. And here's the thing. The cast is incredible. And it's even shot by Roger Deakins, and it feels like a masterpiece. But right around here is where everything starts to fall apart. And I know in the last movie I mentioned some financials, so I'll mention it here. Last movie we talked about cost $75.
Mm-hmm.
Signs cost $75 million. This one cost less. It cost $60. I imagine it's because people took points on the back end, perhaps. But the last movie, Signs, made $500 million. This movie made $260 million. Which, not bad, still profitable, but that is a sign of the decline to come.
Yep.
And this movie has twice the dialogue and twice the characters, and most of it is 100% wasted. And I enjoy what it's doing. And again, this is why I was saying, if you remake this, hire someone else. Or maybe... hire someone else for the script and have M. Night direct. I like his direction. But this movie just feels like a wet pool noodle. And it's just sloppy. There's no point. Anyway. After the monster attack, we see something very important. Which is a half of pig being thrown onto a rock. And this is what makes sense to me about everything. Because... when it's decided that because Joaquin Phoenix has been stabbed, he's been stabbed once, we see it right in the gut, and then there's like a stab right through his heart, which, I don't know, man. It's 2004, and we don't have magic now.
I think the danger was that he had gotten a gut wound that had become infected. So any of y'all Civil War enthusiasts out there know that is really dangerous.
Well, to quote Reservoir Dogs, getting shot in the knee and the stomach is the most painful, but it takes you the longest to die. However, at one point, he jumps on his chest and stabs him in the lung. And I'm sorry, buddy. Without medical attention, if you have a collapsed lung, you die. Like, it's not good. But anyway, they decide the only answer is to go to the nearby the town.
And, the town.
And get some answers. Now, something we get, which is important, is that William Hurt takes Bryce Dallas Howard to a shed. And we don't see what happens in the shed until later, right? But she, after that, she's given two things. He gets three things. A bag of magic rocks, which, I mean, come on. I mean,
even her, even the other two guys who are supposed to go with her because she's blind don't fall for that.
Yeah, it's bad. And then we get, and she's supposed to bring a pocket watch to trade for medicine. And she's given two dudes, like Matt alluded to, Michael Pitt and Jesse Eisenberg. And I'll say something which is interesting about this, which, I mean, Matt and I talk a lot about modern life and politics and stuff. But this is a world filled with the softest men that have ever existed. We'll find out later it's because they're afraid of violence and they want to wean violence out of their livelihood. But, like, the two dudes she goes with are Michael Pitt and Jesse Eisenberg. And they're, like, the most soft, pale, nothing people that have ever existed on film.
And they ditch a blind girl in the woods.
Oh, geez, Morty. Oh, gosh. Oh, man. It's sad.
Although it's, like, you know, I think, you know, the whole spiel William Hurt comes with they're still trying to keep the lie going.
Yeah.
By saying, well, with these magic rocks, they'll protect you from those we do not speak of. And then one of the guys is like, why haven't we heard of these magic rocks before? You know, he's following.
Said the film reviewer.
Yeah, he's following the logic of their weird little society that, you know, no one has ever said anything about magic rocks that allow us to pass through the territory of those we do not speak of. So he's like, he figures out this is BS. He doesn't know it's all BS, which we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah. I mean, and we approach. I mean, here's the thing, Matt, you're a much better writer than I am. Can you tell me, I mean, I assume this follows a three-act structure. The thing that bothered me the most about this movie is it felt so flowingly meaningless. There's, like, no movement to this movie until she decides to go find the medicine, especially since the smash cut cold open of anything that happens after the funeral is Joaquin Phoenix saying, "Dear Diary, I would like to go to the city to find things to make us happy, like something my father dreams about called a baconator." Like,
and he does, and he has like he has these little speech that he reads
multiple times, and he's like, "My father keeps talking about biggie sizing something and something called a double decker taco." And you're just like, all right, fine. Like, and she goes out of town with a pocket watch. How much can I buy for this? And you're just like, well, I guess you could get the Goron sword or some nonsense. But, like, this movie feels like it's just plodding along, and then all of a sudden, someone almost dies, so M. Night Shyamalan has to drink a cup of coffee and read the Philadelphia Inquirer.
Yeah, just sort of, there's, you know, the Lucius goes into the woods, and that quote unquote provokes the first intrusion by those of which we do not speak. Then there's the second alleged intrusion. That's at the older sister's wedding.
All right.
Where the bunch of animals get killed.
Which I will say.
So those are two action-y, scary bits. And otherwise, the live, you know, life and times of the Amish.
Well, and I will say, that scene is so effective. Like, people are dying. People are wounded. And so what do? Well, we're going to have a celebration because there's a wedding and there's dancing and there's shit. And like, there's these banquet feasts. And then all of a sudden, they have, like, a bell tower or something at the edge of town.
Yeah,
like the lookout tower.
Yeah, the lookout tower. And if those we do not speak of come in the town, you start ringing the bell, and everyone goes into their basement.
You know what, though? Like, and again, I'm not I mean, you're the sci-fi writer, and I respect you greatly for that. And I wish you, like, when we rewrite this, of course, as we would, we could fix this. But that's almost the better start of this movie. I don't need the funeral scene because it doesn't matter since it's a lie. But it'd be great if we smash cut to, like, a Babette's feast or something where it's, like, you know, this weird 19th century wedding. And everyone's cheering and everyone's dancing. Why the fuck is there a watchtower? What does the bell even mean?
Introduce the fantastic elements earlier.
Right. I mean, it's the Steve Martin rule. Always make the biggest joke the first joke. But, like, if everything's happy, everything's flowing, it's copacetic. We're all happy. We're dancing some weird white person square dance because there's not a black person within 100 miles of this movie.
I think you see one in there somewhere.
No, I think the darkest person is M. Night Shyamalan.
One of the, I think like a crowd shot at the wedding.
But even still, like everyone's eating this food, they're wearing old clothing, and at the edge of town, the one person who isn't invited is like, holy shit, is that a monster? And they ring the bell, and all of a sudden, someone gets like Freddy Krueger clawed gutted. Then the movie starts. The thing is, this movie doesn't need a twist, and the last 10 minutes is a very long nonsense twist. But even still, if you're going to do the twist, start it by giving us like the James Bond weird cold open where normalcy is happening, and all of a sudden it goes wrong.
All of a sudden the 10-foot-tall hedgehog man with velociraptor claws shows up.
And we just did Signs. The CGI in Signs was something we had a problem with. This is a costume. We see the costume, and somehow an empty costume is also terrifying.
Yeah, that when, like, you know, when she takes her to the shed and she reaches out and touches the claws, that's scary. Even though she freaks the hell out, even though she, being blind, has never seen one of these things before.
And guess what? Us watching her touch it is also terrifying. Anyway, I mean, redirecting it back, when she's wandering in the woods and another one shows up, it loses its fear somehow because we know too much, but we also don't know enough.
Well, William Hurt said, well, there were stories of creatures in the woods. I taught about them in my class. So then he tells Bryce Dallas Howard the whole story about how this was all an elaborate lie. But suddenly a monster shows up. Whoa, maybe there really is a monster. No.
I feel here we should talk about why they're out in the woods. So,
we touched on this a little bit earlier. The founders of the town, the quote-unquote elders, were all people who lost someone in their family to crime.
Violent crime, specifically.
William Hurt's father was a rich man who was too trusting of certain people, so he just got straight up murdered.
Right.
And other people lost family members, like being randomly robbed or a drug out crack addict shot a guy in the hospital or this and that. So they decide, okay, we're going to go LARP as Amish people.
Well, and I will
live in a happy rural community. There's no violence. And then it'll just make up the monsters in the woods to scare people from leaving.
Well, and I also add, which is Sigourney Weaver has the best, which is that your father was found dead outside of a barn, which makes it sound like it was like a drug trade gone wrong, but she had to say, barn.
Was he the one who said they went to the market and they found him naked in the river? Was that her?
Yes. But that's what I mean. Like, it's just like, you don't find someone naked in a street unless it's bad. Something bad happened. But like,
yes. And then I think that William Hurt's dad was also super rich.
Everyone's super rich.
So that's like the big walls of outside of the, is like Walker Nature Preserve.
Yeah. So we're told that there's, like Matt said, there's like X amount of like 1,000 square acres that are blocked off. And to prevent people, like I would assume future episode of the Truman Show, there's to prevent people from going to the outer limits, there's a monster. There's something trying to keep you in. Right?
Yeah. The to get out of the town requires going through the territory of those of whom we do not speak, of which they keep speaking.
The meteors.
The hedgehogmen.
The hedgehogmen.
Hello, I'm Bill Hedgehogman. I'll be your attorney.
They're going to need one for this.
No kidding. So River, oh my God, that was a Joaquin Phoenix, not his dead brother River Phoenix. River died of an overdose at Johnny Depp's bar back in the day. So Joaquin Phoenix, who's bleeding out, they need what I assume is penicillin. We're not told what the medicines are.
Yeah.
Here's why you start with the wedding. If you're Gleason, you're like, why did my son have to die at the age of 7 and we're going to save your son by breaking all the rules? Why is Bryce Dallas Howard blind? Maybe she just needs glasses or something. We can fix this in the modern era. And yes, I know, people are born blind, but that's not what they tell us about her. She was fully a seeing person until she was the age of, I think they said 7 or 8.
Yeah, sound like elementary school aged.
And then she lost her sight, which sucks and still happens. But in the modern era, there's a lot of things we can do to prevent such things. So I don't know why this one particular person gets to break all the rules, but it's one of those things that really feels forced in this movie.
Yeah, and and meanwhile, they locked Noah up in like the isolation room, and he somehow found another monster suit, broke out of the house.
In the basement of the classroom. It's underneath the floorboards.
Yeah, so, and then he sneaks off. We are not dealing with a criminal mass. Like, the movie would have us believe that he had killed the animals, but he is so panicked by the sight of blood when he stabs Lucius. They would have found him curled up in the fetal position next to a dead cow an hour earlier if he'd killed them.
Here's the thing.
And so he chases her off into the woods in a monster suit.
He does.
Remember, this is a guy who's mentally a toddler. He's not a criminal mastermind.
No, and I also will say, Matt's right, but they don't define any of what that means. Like, sometimes he needs to be disciplined by adults. Sometimes he doesn't. At one point, we see him beating up like a middle schooler.
It looked at me they were like stick fighting. Everyone was laughing. But then Bryce Dallas Howard gets so mad at him. He's like, we don't hit.
Well, and maybe...
It sounded like a more aggressive version of like in the movie Charlie, where you see Charlie on one end of the seesaw and like 6 kids on the other.
Yeah, but I was going to say, maybe it's part of the, we were all victims of violence, so they're going to make everyone soft.
Even, you know, someone acting unaggressively in a, aggressively in a childish way would freak them out.
Well, but to me, that's kind of the game, right? Because, what's his name? Like, we have so many, like, the two guys who are supposed to go with her are such, like, mealy-mouthed nothings that when Adrian Brody stands up for himself, we're supposed to beat him down? Like, which seems like it should matter, but it really doesn't. And then also, if he is truly like Down syndrome or whatever he's supposed to have, him dying alone in a pit is, like, horrifying.
I think that's the point. These people wanted to create their Amish paradise and ended up with dead kids, crippled kids, and a kid who went crazy and is now dying in a pit impaled on things.
This movie needed to be re-edited because there's that scene
heads.
When she returns with the medicine and she's like, and I found one of those monsters and I killed him. And the parents of him, you know, his parents are crying. It's effective, but it takes us so long to get there. It feels like it's a waste.
And meanwhile, they have that whole thing. Oh, we have a truce with them we don't speak of. And yet he's saying, okay, well, she killed one of them. And then one of them killed Noah. Yeah, the truce is over now. You know, my father once told me of something called an M16.
But, like, even outside of, you know, a gun fantasy here, there's so much they could do. And again, part of it is that it's, you could make it like it was like a Fallout video game and have it set like it's actually the 90s or 2000s, but there's nuclear war on, so we could barely contact with people. But instead, when she breaks over the wall, and I will say one effective shot for me is there's this, she makes it through the woods, she's supposed to take the path, she's supposed to go blank way on the path, but there's no compass, so she just starts walking in the correct direction because that's how the movie
and
goes.
And she's blind.
And then she walks into this wall, which is like, I assume it's just like a fence, like a hook-link fence, covered in like fake ivy. And she knows what it is, climbs over it, and then this poor guy named Kevin is like, huh!
Yeah, you run into someone, a blind Shakespeare in the Park actor.
You know what, Matt? I could have said it better myself, buddy, because it's just like, she's like, forsooth, what is your name? And he goes, my name is Kevin. And she looks at like, oh, Sir Kevin, as though she's never heard the name before, because Kevin is a name that doesn't exist outside of 1984 or whatever. And she's like, dearest sir, I have this watch. Could you take my watch? I need these medicines. And he looks up and it's just like, morphine, 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 penicillin, morphine, morphine.
That's an awful lot of morphine. Wonder who's addicted to it.
But that's kind of what he does. Yeah. And he and Emmerich
almost... Domhnall Gleeson's back there shooting up.
Now, on top of this, I would like you to get me something with cheese in the crust. Now, I haven't been back to the city for 17 years, but I've heard that the Domino's Pizza has put cheese, and that the Burger King of us all has made it the chicken fries, you see. I know that's what the meat people eat, but you know, we too can have the cheese in the crust.
At least Wakanda, they sent people out now and then to see what's going on.
But, and that's kind of what it bothers me about this movie. Like, everything seems so... this is the most pretentious LARPing that has ever been.
Yeah,
like,
except people don't die of preventable diseases when you LARP.
Yeah, but it helps if you don't have a social security number or something. You're just a kid who dies and disappears. Like, this is really... how do I put this? There's no stakes to this.
Yeah.
Other than the stakes in this world. It would be interesting if...
yeah, this is the Shakespeare in the Park Jonestown.
Right? It should be. I just want there to be more stakes. Like, what if there was a disease that came in that affected all of them and she was their only hope? Like, I get it. They picked the blind woman because she wouldn't see what she was seeing.
Yeah, they've been isolated so long they've lost all their immunity to diseases, and so some hiker accidentally infects them with smallpox.
Or, I mean, if you want to get really dark, Dogtooth. If you haven't seen Dogtooth, it's a great movie, but, like, the whole thing is, like, those planes you see flying over us, those are monsters. Like, everything, you can't leave us because we will be, like, outside this world, everything is horrifying. But instead, they're billionaires, so they just buy a chunk of protected forest? It's there's no stakes here. Anyway, I guess Joaquin Phoenix survives. That's how the movie ends.
Yeah, and they think they can keep their scam going for a bit longer by saying, oh, she killed one of them, they killed one of us, and no one will ask any more questions.
And because she killed the monster, they'll believe everything else is true. Meanwhile, his parents are, like, crying behind them because they know what that means. Also, this whole thing is nonsense because the next generation is becoming kids. I mean, I get it. That's why you keep them, like, weak, no violence, everything is soft. But, like, I'm sorry, man. Like, you're in Philadelphia. There's not, like, an interstate or a turnpike that you hear that are the monsters. You throw your frisbee too far, you're going to fight a car.
Yeah, I think they had the M. Night Shyamalan's cameo. They have to kind of shove it in there. Well, you know, they made it a no-fly zone a few years ago, and that made things awkward. And we don't want to make things awkward, don't we, Kevin?
First of all, you're a great actor. That's too close to Forrest Gump. M. Night Shyamalan's like, I am sorry. They made this a no-fly zone. It's the driest... why do you have to be in your movies?
You should be the guy who's buying a bus pass. Meanwhile, he's so entregued by violent stories, like the true crime part of the Philadelphia Inquirer. He doesn't notice that the other sheriff, Kevin, is stealing morphine and penicillin. And I hope needles, because we don't see him taking any like injection points. There's nothing. He's just stealing vials of medicine to give to this blind woman along with a McRib, because it's only back for part of the year.
Yes, we're gonna leave our LARP long enough to get a McRib.
I would like a cold cut combo from a restaurant they call the Subway. And could you see if Michael Crichton has come out with any new books?
If they're living like it's 1897, they'd still use coins. So Ivy has a bag of gold coins. Like, you can have all the McRibs.
1900 party over, whoops, out of time. Matt, final thoughts.
It's like Highlander 2 when will be released from behind the Patreon wall at some point, where Ramirez gives the tailor an earring.
Well, right.
And they're like giving him cigars.
It's like shitty Back to the Future. Like, I don't even know what to tell you.
Guys. All right, I think it's time to say goodbye.
Yeah. Do it. So, tell me. Final thoughts.
See it once, maybe, and don't think about it too much. It looks good and it's well acted, but it just makes less and less sense the more you think about it.
As I said when we first started, this was the movie that made me stop watching M. Night in theaters. Rewatching it, it had more emotional moments than I remembered. I think it's better than I remembered. But this movie is a colossal mess. I don't know how else to tell you. It's just sloppy. And the problem is the sloppiness comes only from the script and the twist. If you told me originally he didn't want to make a twist, I'd believe you. But, like, the actors, great. The acting, good. The shots are good. The directing is good. But it just proves that, like, there's one bad part of a movie, it can make a movie suck. This movie feels... It's like if you had Thanksgiving dinner, but there was no turkey and no pie. It's all the side pieces. It's all the filler. And they're good filler, but it's not substantial at the end of the day. That's how I'll put it. I don't hate it. I just wish there was more. And, you know, there's emotional moments, but it's because the actors are acting their asses off. And I don't know why. This should be a paycheck for people, but it's not. Anyway, we're 3 weeks through our M. Night month. Next month, hey, bro, we're going to watch The Happening, where Mark Wahlberg is going to tell you, you know what, I'm a science teacher, so you know what, bro? I know what's going on.
It's the trees. Wow, I'm turning to Nicolas Cage. It's the trees. Nah,
I mean, you're almost halfway to Welcome to Night Vale. The trees. They are us. We are the trees. I do like cold hot dog guy who's just handing out cold dogs. Anyway.
For a second, you sounded like Herbert from Family Guy.
I did. Hey.
Want to be murdered by the trees of the boy?
Anyway, guys, I want to thank you for listening, and I want to thank you for subscribing, and also thank you for supporting us, man. My boy Matt here, oldest friend, he does a lot of things, and he's sleepy. He's so tired. I'm tired. I'm tired, too. But here's what. We're here for you. So at the end of our M. Night Shyamalan month, we don't do Patreon anymore, but Matt has helped me sculpt one hell of a schedule for this year. So as we end this month, I want to thank you, and we get one more beautiful gem. Keep writing, keep recording, keep reviewing, keep sharing all those wonderful things we do.
And check out our Facebook group so you can get my spicy memes.
Yeah. Matt is in charge of our Facebook group, and while I'm in charge of our Twitter, half the tweets we have come from him sharing what he's doing, including live tweeting the movies we do next. So if you're curious what the future is, even before we release it, it's up to him. Yeah. Anyway, so next week we're doing The Happening, and thanks, guys.
Season 9 of Myopia Movies is produced by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Suttis. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman and stars Daniel Suttis and Matt Quinn. The theme music is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod of Incomtech.com and is licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and review us wherever podcasts are found. Thanks, guys.